I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
No, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Gorlitz, Germany, July 1923. Elsbeth Eberton was at her desk studying a birth chart. The birth date on the chart was the 20th of April, 1889. The sun was in Aries at 29 degrees. She'd later learned the sun was actually in Taurus at 0 degrees, but what she saw then was enough. Something about the way the planets lined up bothered her. She wrote her findings in her journal.
This native will become a force of destiny. In times of struggle, he will successfully lead others down a dark path. He will play the role of Führer in the battles to come. His greatest trial will arrive in 1945.
Eberton published this prediction in her 1924 almanac. The chart belonged to Adolf Hitler. By 1933, she feared what she'd set in motion, writing in her diary.
The stars can show us paths, but they cannot make us walk them. I fear what this man will do with the destiny I revealed.
Eberton's fear wasn't unique. For centuries, others had seen this darkness, a storm gathering slowly in the west, each prophet adding their voice to the growing thunder. For centuries, the signs had been there, warnings in ancient texts, a darkness gathering in the heart of Europe. The signs weren't vague or abstract, they were specific, detailed, like a roadmap to a future nobody wanted. In 1555, Michel de Nostredame sat in his study in Salon de Provence, France. His famous quatrain spoke of a leader rising from Western Europe.
Out of the deepest part of Western Europe, from poor people a young child shall be born, who with his tongue shall seduce many people. His fame shall increase in the Eastern Kingdom. He shall come to tyrannize the land. He shall raise up a hatred that had long been dormant. The child of Germany observes no law. Cries and tears, fire, blood, and battle.
Then, centuries later, in 1821, the German-Jewish poet Heinrich Heine saw a storm brewing in his homeland. His words weren't just poetry, they were a chilling premonition.
When you hear a crashing such as never before has been heard in the history of the world, then you will know that the German thunderbolt has fallen. At that uproar, the eagles of the air will drop dead. The lions in the remotest deserts of Africa will hide in their royal dens. A play will be performed in Germany, which will make the French Revolution look like an innocent idol.
And then came a forest worker from Bavaria named Matthias Stormberger. In 1830, he didn't just speak of a war and death. He saw a world transformed. Iron carriages moving without horses. Great wire boxes carrying voices across vast distances. But then his visions turned darker, more specific. He saw two wars that would devastate Europe.
When the iron road comes and iron wagons run without horses, the first great war will begin. It will last 2 years, then pause. After this war comes a time when money loses all value. When a loaf of bread costs thousands of marks, then troubles will begin. There will be a false prosperity, then a great collapse. And then comes the greater war.
Even across the Atlantic in the 20th century, the American psychic Edgar Cayce had visions. In 1934, he spoke of imperialism rising in Europe through a man, Adolf Hitler. In 1935, he predicted the start of World War II in 1939. He also predicted America's entry into the conflict in 1941. These were precise descriptions of the world to come, a world that was about to be consumed by fire and hatred. These were not just warnings, they were a call to action. But the call wasn't for us, it was a signal, beckoning a secret society into the light. Munich, 1918. In the back room of a beer hall, a wounded World War I veteran named Walter Nauhaus met with a group of like-minded individuals. They weren't there to mourn the war. They were there looking for something more, a hidden source of power. They called themselves the Thule Society. These weren't just a bunch of mystics and dreamers. Nauhaus believed he'd found the key to humanity's true origin in the teachings of a Russian occultist, Elena Blavatsky. She wrote about a race of superhuman beings that had given humanity its knowledge, its technology, its prophecies. And the Thule Society believed these beings had chosen the German people as their successors. They weren't just interested in ancient lore. They were looking to actively shape the future. They wanted to control which prophecies the German people believed. They also wanted to find the source of all human power. Their beliefs attracted influential people, people in high places, journalists, judges, police chiefs, and of course, a failed Austrian artist who is desperately looking for purpose in his life. They saw in him something special, a coming savior, a leader, a Führer. That man was Adolf Hitler. Hitler's early mentor, Dietrich Eckart, claimed he saw a vision during a seance that Hitler would lead Germany to its destiny, and that vision became his obsession. He dedicated his life and all his energy to the rise of this leader. Eckart's influence was so strong that Hitler dedicated Mein Kampf to him. Another one of Hitler's early mentors was Erich Jan Hanussen. This guy was more than just a mystic. He was a showman and hypnotist who happened to be a master of manipulation. Hanussen taught Hitler how to hold a crowd, how to make his speeches more effective. He taught him dramatic pauses, how to use his voice, even his gestures. Hanussen helped Hitler become prophecy incarnate. In February 1933, at his Palace of the Occult in Berlin, Hanussen told his wealthy clients, "I see fire. An important German building will burn within the week." 5 days later, the Reichstag building burned. The Nazi Party used that fire to declare emergency powers and begin their transformation of Germany. And Hanussen? His prediction was a little too accurate. He was executed a few weeks later. Hitler's rise to power was no accident. It was a carefully choreographed performance. Prophecies, ancient wisdom, and mystical power were not just things Hitler believed. They were tools he was using to build his own prophecy. The year is 1939. The storm clouds are gathering over Europe. But within Germany, another storm is brewing, the transformation of Adolf Hitler into a prophet. But this time, Hitler's inner circle was a strange mix of military advisors and occult believers. Each one shaped him in different ways. Each one added to the growing myth of his destiny. But one man had already left a lasting impact. Erich Jan Hanussen taught Hitler about performance and crowd control, the dramatic pauses, the specific gestures, the modulated voice. All of it was to command and control. But Hanussen knew too much. A month after predicting the Reichstag fire, he was found dead in a field outside Berlin. The official explanation, suicide. The truth, 3 bullets in the back of his head. A man who understood power, but perhaps a little too well. Now, Joseph Goebbels, Minister of Propaganda, stepped in to fill the gap. Goebbels wasn't content with just speeches. He was creating a mythos around Hitler, a divine figure chosen by destiny, whose words were themselves prophecies. He had teams searching for mythical texts and compiling any prediction they could twist to support Hitler's rise. But Goebbels didn't just use prophecies, he manufactured them. He wrote Hitler's speeches, carefully framing every word and every gesture to fit a narrative of inevitable victory, a narrative of destiny. And in January 1939, Hitler stepped onto the stage at the Kroll Opera House in Berlin and spoke to the Reichstag. And on that night, he did more than reference prophecies. He became one.
"Today, I will be once more a prophet if the international Jewish financiers in and outside Europe should succeed in plunging the nations once more into a world war, then the result will not be the Bolshevization of the earth and thus the victory of Jewry, but the annihilation of the Jewish race in Europe."
This wasn't a casual remark. It was a chilling pronouncement of intent, recorded in the Reichstag minutes on January 30th, 1939. This wasn't about some hidden destiny. This was a roadmap for the future. Goebbels often referred to the speech as Hitler's prophecy. He knew the power of self-fulfilling predictions. He understood that if you repeatedly proclaim your destiny, people might begin to believe it. Hitler and Goebbels crafted the self-fulfilling prophecy of victory. And Goebbels wasn't wrong. He used that 1939 speech to keep his soldiers in line, to fuel his concentration camps, to make his people believe their leader was a prophet, not a madman. But there was a problem with this plan. For all of his power, Goebbels couldn't control everything. There were other prophecies, whispered in secret, circulating through the German army. Prophecies that didn't fit his narrative. Prophecies of a different destiny. Prophecies from the Old Testament. The very stories that Hitler and Goebbels tried to ban from Germany. They were about to spread, whether they wanted them to or not. And it all started with a queen named Esther, who lived over 2,000 years before Hitler was born. On April 7th, 1933, Nazi Germany declared war on a book. Not just any book, the Old Testament. The announcement came through official channels. The Old Testament will be banned from German schools and churches. It would be replaced by ancient Germanic sagas and the tales of World War I heroes. The Nazi Party called it creating a new nationalized church. But the real reason was darker. Hidden in those banned pages were prophecies they couldn't control or manipulate. Prophecies that predicted not Nazi victory, but their ultimate defeat. The first prophecy came from the Book of Daniel, the tale of King Nebuchadnezzar's dream of a giant statue. A statue that only Daniel, a Jewish prisoner, could interpret. The statue had a head of gold, representing Nebuchadnezzar's Babylonian Empire. The chest and arms were silver, the Medo-Persian Empire. The belly and thighs were bronze, the Greco-Macedonian Empire. The legs were iron, Rome. But the feet were iron mixed with clay. These represented divided kingdoms that would follow Rome. Kingdoms that could never truly unite. Kingdoms that were destined to crumble. The Nazis dismissed this interpretation as a Jewish trick, but some in the German military weren't so sure. One of those soldiers was Franz Hassel. He carried no weapon, only a wooden carving shaped like a gun, and he carried something else, the conviction that Hitler's Third Reich would soon collapse. But there was another prophecy the Nazis feared above all others, one that spoke of their ultimate destruction. It came from a Jewish queen. It was the year 486 BC. The Persian Empire sprawled across three continents, covering 44% of the world's population. One man ruled it all, King Xerxes I. But the real power behind the Persian throne was a Jewish woman named Esther, and she was about to uncover a plot that would shake the empire to its core. Esther's cousin Mordecai intercepted encrypted messages between high-ranking officials. The messages detailed systematic extermination of all Jews in the empire. The mastermind? Haman, the king's closest advisor. The date was set. The orders were sealed with the king's ring. But Haman made one crucial mistake. He didn't know the queen was Jewish. Esther waited. She hosted elaborate banquets. Night after night, she gained the king's trust. Then she made her move. At the final banquet, she revealed everything. Her Jewish identity, Haman's plot, and most importantly, evidence that Haman had been embezzling from the royal treasury. The king's fury was swift. Haman ended up hanging from his own gallows, a 75-foot structure he had built for Mordecai. But Esther wasn't finished. She knew Haman's 10 sons possessed copies of their father's orders. They also had to be killed. All of them were found hanging the next morning. The official story? Mass suicide. Palace whispers suggest otherwise. Today, Jews celebrate Purim to commemorate these events. They wear masks and costumes hiding their true identity, just like Esther did. But here's the strange part. The Book of Esther is the only book in the Hebrew Bible that never mentions God, not even once. And some scholars say this was intentional. And something strange happened when scribes recorded the execution of Haman's 10 sons. In the text, three letters were written smaller than the rest, Tav, Shin, and Zayin, and one letter, Vav, was written larger. These letters have numerical values in Hebrew. The smaller letters added up to 707. The larger letter equaled 6. Together they formed the Jewish year 5707. On our calendar, that's 1946. And what happened in October 1946? That was the Nuremberg trials, in which 23 Nazi leaders were tried. 11 of them were executed for their war crimes. 2 hours before the execution, Hermann Göring committed suicide, leaving 10 Nazi war criminals to be executed. Normally, since they were charged by military tribunal, they would die by firing squad. But in this case, the court condemned them to death by hanging, just like Haman's sons, and all in accordance with Esther's prophetic request. Even more striking, some of the last words of Nazi war criminal Julius Streicher as he approached the gallows were Purimfest, or Purimfest 1946, according to some accounts. Purim was the Jewish holiday that celebrates Queen Esther's tale. Hitler himself mentioned this prophecy in a speech in 1944. He warned that if the Nazis were defeated, the Jews could celebrate a second Purim. The Nazis tried to suppress these prophecies, but in doing so, they only made them stronger. And in the end, it wasn't Hitler's self-proclaimed prophecy of victory that came true. It was the prophecy from a Jewish queen who lived over 2,000 years ago. And as their power grew, the Nazis began looking for more prophecies to justify their actions. But as the Third Reich expanded, so did the fear of what was to come. But the Nazis didn't just fear the words in the Bible. They feared the power those words held, the power to manifest reality itself. And their desperate attempt to control it finally led them down the path already chosen for them by them. The Nazis sought to control their destiny, but the more they pushed, the more the prophecies turned against them. Their victory was written, but so was their destruction. The Nazi propaganda machine led by Joseph Goebbels was masterful. He knew the power of words, the power of belief, and the power of prophecy. They used carefully selected and edited prophecies to convince the German people that Hitler's rise was inevitable, that their victory was preordained. Hitler was a godlike figure who had been chosen by destiny. He was to build a German empire that would last 1,000 years. The German people were a chosen people. The world was in their grasp, and they were untouchable. This, along with the fear and propaganda, justified the mass murder of millions of innocent people. This was prophecy, they were told. It was destiny. But in reality, it was nothing but lies. The clearest evidence comes from the Nazis themselves. Their own documents reveal how they manipulated prophecies to control their people. Joseph Goebbels didn't just refer to Nostradamus' quatrains, he edited them to make them fit Hitler's rise. They weren't ancient, immutable truths, they were political tools carefully crafted for maximum effect. Take, for example, Hitler's prophecy about annihilating the Jewish people. It wasn't a mystical vision, it was a statement of intent. A declaration of war was recorded in the Reichstag minutes on January 30, 1939. Not the fulfillment of a divine plan, but a chilling record of a deliberate decision. The connection between Haman's sons and Nuremberg executions, that's documented history. Julius Streicher's final words, Purimfest 1946, appear in official execution records. The parallel of the 10 hangings is a striking coincidence, a powerful echo of an ancient tale. But many of the heinous attacks on Jews during World War II were intentionally tied to Purim, including events in 1942 and 1943, in which 10 Jews were hanged to avenge the sons of Haman. So Streicher's comment didn't come out of nowhere. The Nazis were very aware of Purim. But other elements require closer examination. Those Hebrew letters in the Book of Esther, yes, they exist. 3 letters are smaller, Tav, Shin, Zayin. 1 letter is larger, Vav. And yes, their numerical values do add up to the Jewish year 5707, which corresponds to 1946. However, these variations in letter size aren't unique to this passage. They appear throughout ancient Hebrew texts. Scholars still debate their significance. Some see them as copying errors, others as emphasis marks. The connection to specific dates isn't an ancient truth, it's a modern interpretation, a product of human pattern seeking. Now, Elsbeth Eberton's horoscope for Hitler? It seems striking, yes, but records suggest she likely knew whose birth chart she was reading. She was not an unbiased observer. She wanted to promote her message of German liberation. Her prediction of a Führer was a politically savvy statement rather than some unworldly vision. And there was something else. Elsbeth Eberton said that this man was born with his son 29 degrees in Aries and would rise to great prominence. But Adolf Hitler was a Taurus. His sun stood at 0 degrees 49 minutes. She was wrong, but she wanted you to believe she was right. Erik Jan Hanusen's prediction of the Reichstag fire is more troubling. He was close to Nazi leadership. Some historians suggest he didn't predict the fire, he knew about it in advance. His execution shortly after suggests he knew too much about the truth of its origins. Even the Nazi ban on the Old Testament wasn't primarily about prophecies. The April 7, 1933 announcement in the New York Times makes no mention of Esther or Daniel. The ban was part of a larger campaign to eliminate Jewish influence from German Christianity, to erase their history and rewrite it with their own version of events. But here's something fascinating. Whether these prophecies were true predictions almost doesn't matter. Prophecies don't have to predict the future to change it. Sometimes they change it simply by existing, by being believed, by inspiring action or resistance, by allowing people to be led to their destiny by their own choice. Modern psychology calls it the expectancy effect. People unconsciously align their actions with what they believe will happen. The stronger the belief, the stronger the effect. The Nazis tried so hard to decipher the past to predict the future, but the future was happening right in front of them. By the time they realized this, it was too late. The tale of Nazi Germany and their obsession with prophecies might seem like the distant past, but it's a story that resonates today in our own lives and our societies. We see how world leaders use manipulation and fear to control people, propaganda disguised as truth. And we are more vulnerable to this manipulation than ever before. We live in a world of carefully crafted narratives, amplified by social media, where it's becoming increasingly difficult to separate fact from fiction. Look at how we were manipulated during COVID. Those of us who were skeptical of the government were marginalized and called conspiracy theorists. I wrote an opinion piece in a newspaper at the beginning of COVID criticizing the lockdowns, the lack of transparency, the government overreach. I called the Wuhan bat theory nonsense and claimed it was government propaganda. I wrote all of this before the issue was politicized. Eventually, I was attacked for the article. But in the past few years, we've learned everything I said was true. If you follow the Y-Files closely, you probably also had your suspicions about the information we were being fed. And just like the German people of the past, today we are bombarded with information, with warnings, with fear. But who's behind these messages? And what's their real intent? Well, the answer is control. Now, am I comparing the American government to the Nazis? Of course not. But many of their actions were fascist. Now, that's a word that's casually thrown around a bit too much. But if you force my business to close for 2 years and arrest me for not wearing a mask on an empty beach, I'm sorry, but that's totalitarianism. That is power run amok. So this story was about Nazi prophecies, and I think they were fun. But the real reason I wrote this episode was to warn about the dangers of unchecked power and the insidious nature of propaganda. Let this be a reminder that fear and lies can lead us down a dark path, a path of division, where we're forced to choose a side, and those who are not on our side, we're taught to hate them. We can't let this happen. We're not helpless. We have more power than our leaders. We have a responsibility to question the information we receive from so-called authorities and so-called experts. We have a responsibility to resist those who seek to control us. We can't let others control our future. Your future is determined by you. It's determined by the choices you make. So now more than ever, with so much propaganda being presented as news, your choices matter, whether it's a small choice or a big one. These choices will create your destiny. Be sure to choose wisely.